And is tonight, Representative Soils and Buns have asked us if we could hear regular people that can't come to the Capitol a lot of times about the issues regarding mold and other construction problems. And I happen to be a member of the Construction Law Section of our association, so I'm very familiar with this, and I've represented, I've represented subcontractors, contractors, engineers, homeowners, owners of commercial and insurance companies on construction, but I haven't represented architects, so that's the one area that I haven't represented, so I'm pretty familiar with the problem. But we think that it's important that all legislators know about these issues, and so I think that what we're going to do tonight, that I believe that most of the testimony here from people that have had problems or want to give testimony on the issues are on the 211 bill, the attorney's fees for when homeowners win lawsuits. And so what we're going to do is we'll start with the other one. That I think will be very short. And then we'll go to the other one. And tonight we're not going to vote on these bills. We're not going to take amendments here. This is for you as the public to have input for everybody. And we can get into our discussions back at the Capitol and voting and amendments and things like that. So with that, first I'll call up House File 412. Representative Bunn, do you want to come up? And I believe you said you had a witness that was going to explain the bill, because this bill is fairly technical. And then is there somebody here from the Builders Association of Minnesota? Okay, you're the one that Lisa said is going to testify. Okay, Will, are you on this bill or just mainly on the other one? Oh, you're not? Oh, okay, I thought she said you would be testifying. Okay, that's fine. Okay, Representative Bunn, do you want to give a quick introduction and then have your witness that explains the bill first and then go to the regular people?
Thank you, Chair Mulroy. First of all, I just want to make sure this is working. Patrick, is this working?
First of all, Representative Bunn, I forgot. You're not on the committee. Yeah. Representative Jackson, do you want to move the bill?
Oh, if you're not going to vote, we probably don't need to move, do we? Do we need to move that?
So you're supposed to do it to discuss it.
Okay. Then I will move the bill identified as House File Number 412.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just want to confirm also that this is not actually amplifying in the room. Is that correct? So I speak very loudly with my back to the audience. I'll try to do that. I hope they let us know if they can hear what we're saying.
Can everybody hear her?
It's hard. I'll speak very loudly then. Mr. Chair, the issue I raise with this bill, House File 412, is in the nature of a technical fix, in that the change of proposals aims to make clear the original legislative intent of a 2004 amendment to 541.051 Subdivision 4, such that courts can interpret it unambiguously going forward. Before we proceed to discuss this clarification of legislative intent and the technical change to ensure that it is clear, we will hear testimony from homeowners this evening. There is nothing technical or small about the enormous impact on the lives and financial security of individuals and families in our district, damages to their homes and their efforts to collect and make sure these their homes are repaired. Families throughout our communities have depleted their savings they had planned for college, savings they had planned for their retirement, in order to hire attorneys to pursue their claims, and then they are strung out until the pressure of accumulating attorneys' costs forces them to accept significant discounts on what it actually costs them to repair the homes. I shall be brief to describe this current bill. Prior to 2004, there was no statute or proposed for warranty claims, i.e. no year beyond which an action could be made. According to a reading of the actual language in the 2004 amendment, and the transcripts of the legislative hearings in 2003 and 2004, and the intent expressed in them, is our contention that Subdivision 4 of Section 1 of 541.051, the bill before you, has two distinct components. First, that the actions be brought within 2 years of discovery of the breach, meaning that they have only 2 years from discovery and reporting it to the builder to make an action, i.e. file the lawsuit. This is essentially a statute of limitations related to the breach. The second component is that in no event may any action be brought more than 12 years after the effective date of warranty, the date of warranty being roughly the date which they move in or take possession of the property. This is a 12-year statute of repose. Why are we here before you with this short bill to make some clarifying changes? After this 2004 amendment and through the period including 2007, there was various interpretations of this change and what it meant. The confusion about repose, how long it was, whether it was actually 12, occurred largely because Subdivision 1, which is another subdivision of this section of 541.051, refers to a 10-year statute of repose. So in one subdivision it refers to a 10-year, and in the other subdivision, the one we're dealing with, it refers to a 12-year. Some courts interpreted that the Subdivision 1 applied also in warranty cases. We argue that it was never the intent of the legislature that this Subdivision 1 would apply to warranties under 327A.07. Several district courts agreed with this, but the Court of Appeals and in other cases ruled that the 10-year from Subdivision 1 does apply to warranty cases. So over this time period, there was various interpretations. Different cases were brought and settled under different interpretations of this. Additionally, in the current language in the subdivision, there was some language about the 9th and 10th year and what and related to the breach. This particular language created additional confusions. Finally, in 2007, what's referred to as the Gomez decision by the Court of Appeals held that Subdivision 1 did apply and that the 10-year was the relevant repose. Since this time, that's been the interpretation more likely to occur. The language in the bill before you amends Subdivision 4 to clarify, first, that Subdivision 1 does not apply to breach of warranties. Second, that there's a 2-year statute of limitations on making an action after discovery of the breach. And third, that the statute of repose is 12 years for warranties covered by 327A.05. This means, and this is the key to this whole story, that the discovery of the breach can occur in years 10 and 11. And an action brought, as long as the action is brought within 12 years of the effective warranty date. That's the key component of the story. So as long as you're within the 12 years, you know, where that, you know, breach occurs, if the breach occurs within that 12 years, but also that the breach is reported within 2 years of discovering the damages, then it is allowed that you can file an action in the 10th and 11th year. I now turn over the presentation to Attorney Scott J. Anderson, who will make further clarifying comments about the legislative intent. And then we have testimony from a citizen who is here with a number of other citizens who have been affected by this multiple interpretation of what occurs within year 10 and 12.
Just 1 second. I forgot. You have the sign-up sheet for...
It's up there.
It's right up here.
Why don't we give it to the woman with the red sweater so that that's our legislative assistant. And if you want to testify, please sign up so that we have a record and we can see and go by that. Also testify or write down which bill you want to testify on. And Mr. Andreessen, yes.
And if you prefer, if I can go over here.
Did a lot of people have trouble hearing Representative Bond?
Yeah, I still can't.
I think if you were over here, and it probably would get everybody. We can still hear him in the meeting.
Chair Committee, thank you for taking the time to hear this bill and to hear from me and all of the homeowners out here. Many of them are my clients or former clients. This particular bill, Representative Bond did a good job of explaining the history and how we are here tonight. A couple of things that I want to highlight that I think will clarify the importance of the bill. Number one, she's correct in saying that prior to 2004, and the purpose of the amendment in 2004 was because there was another Court of Appeals case, the Coase decision, that had interpreted the former statute as saying there was no statute of repose. You could literally have a house that was 75 years old and bring a claim under a one-year or a two-year warranty. And not surprisingly, people, when that came to their attention, said, well, that doesn't sound right. So what are we going to do then? We're going to try and fix that, put some sort of clear end date on the warranties. What happened, at least from my reading, and I've read all of the legislative transcripts from the 2004 amendments in both the House and the Senate, and I think it's fairly clear that the intent back then was to simply put an end date on it, and at the same time to make sure that the warranty provisions that homeowners are given, that their statute of repose was not shorter than any claims for, say, breach of contract or negligence that they might otherwise have that are covered by subdivision 1 of the statute. And in fact, the discussion was, in the Senate side for sure, that the intent was to have that statute of repose be longer than the warranty period or the claim for time to bring a claim for a negligence action. The problem with the interpretation of the Gomez Court currently is that what they've decided is that subdivision 1 of the statute, which previously only applied to negligent tort actions and contract actions, now applies to 327A warranty claims. How did they get to that result? I think it's literally an oversight in the drafting of the 2004 amendment, because I've got the statute as it existed prior to 2004. And in subdivision 4, it started by saying, this section shall not apply to actions based on breach of the statutory warranty set forth in 327A, or actions based on breach of express warranty. Right? So it's making it clear. Don't look at subdivision 1. Just look at subdivision 4. And in subdivision 4, then all they said is there's a two-year statute of limitations. Well, because you can't look at subdivision 1, you don't have a statute of repose as of 2004. So then when the amendment comes in to put a statute of repose in, the language, the introductory language of subdivision 4, instead of saying this section shall not apply to, got changed to say for the purposes of actions based on breach of statutory warranties and express warranties. So to me, and the intent in reading the transcript suggests that that is meant to say the same thing. In other words, now we're talking about 327A claims in subdivision 4. Otherwise, if we're just going to have subdivision 1 apply, we don't need subdivision 4. We just put it all in subdivision 1 and make warranty claims subject to the same provisions as all the other claims, contract and negligence claims. Here's why that doesn't work and why they need to have a subdivision 4 and why it needs to be clarified. Because a claim for statutory warranties or express warranties, you don't have a cause of action until the builder has breached the warranty. Right? That's distinct from you discovering an injury in order to bring a negligence claim. Right? Now, if somebody were to discover that they had a problem with their house, say in year 9 years and 363 days after the house is completed, okay, under the interpretation of Gomez, they would have to, in that two-day period, now before the 10 days runs, discover the problem, write the builder a letter telling them that they have a problem, give that builder 30 days written notice and an opportunity to respond. When the builder doesn't respond, after day three of the 30-day period, they've now lost their statutory warranty claim. Because under Gomez's interpretation, the breach has to occur within the 10-year period in a warranty claim. Now, for a negligence claim, that same homeowner would actually have a negligence claim because they discovered it before year 10. So they get the extra 2 years under Subdivision 2 of the statute. There is nothing in any of the legislative history on this amendment that would suggest that anybody intended to have Chapter 327A warranties be shorter than the time frame for bringing a contract claim or a negligence claim. And the interpretation under the language that was drafted is just that. It's you must not only discover the problem, you must give a written notice, and they must tell you to go calm stand or not respond to you at all within that 10-year time frame. Right? That is shorter than what they had previous. This amendment clears that up. The amendment goes back to the language of saying this section does not apply to actions based on breach of statutory warranties. So start out with telling, clarifying.
Go ahead. Mr. Andreessen, I think you're referring to this amendment. I think you mean this bill. You also referred to the amendment in 2004, so
that's true.
Getting people mixed up.
I apologize. The bill, section, House File 412, what it does is it goes back to the old language, which is to tell courts that if you're dealing with a statutory warranty claim, look at Subdivision 4. Don't look at Subdivision 1 because that's going to cause confusion. Right? And then it goes on to keep in place the 2-year statute of limitations, which was there previously, and which is there in the amendments in 2004. And then it goes down to clarify the next piece of it, which is you've got to bring your claim within 12 years. Now, what it gets rid of is the confusing language about what if you discover it in the 9th or the 10th year. Because in the context of the statutory warranty and the requirement that there be a breach of a warranty, that language doesn't, it's superfluous. It doesn't help in terms of giving people the opportunity to discover a problem within their warranty period, contact their builder, figure out if the builder is going to help them, and if the builder won't help them, then bring a cause of action. This bill will make it very clear to courts, to the lawyers who advise all of these homeowners as to what their time frames are. And as an example of that, I'll introduce one of my clients.
I was going to say we should talk to the lawyers because we're trying to get the people that can't come to the legislature and let the legislators hear them tonight.
Right. Mr. Fred Raddick is a client of mine who lives in a community of 24 homeowners, and he'll tell you a little bit about his story. The last thing I'll say in introducing him is when his association came to my office and said they needed some help because they had construction defects throughout their community and a builder who wouldn't help them, the case law that I was looking at were district court actions interpreting the amendment from 2004 to this bill, many of whom had said, it's a federal statute of repose now. That's what was intended. That's what we have. Right? What you're going to hear from Mr. Raddick is that a number of the homeowners in his community were well within that time frame when we brought the lawsuits. Then the Gomez decision comes down, and based on it, 10 of their lawsuits got thrown out of court because of their interpretation of the statute that this bill seeks to correct. So I'd let him tell you his story. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. My name is Floyd Raddick, and I'm here on behalf of Berry Creek Townhouse Association. Berry Creek is located in Chanhassen, Minnesota, and as Scott has referred to, we have 24 rambler type townhouses in the group, all of which are impacted by water intrusion problems. The water intrusion problem for us was discovered sometime in the early part of 2007. And so as soon as we found out about it, we hired a professional engineering firm to come in and assess the nature of the damages. The conclusion of the professional engineering firm is that it was largely attributable to construction defects in installation of windows, lack of repoles, improper tar paper behind the stucco, and not proper drainage over the ledger board. So there was a host of problems that were discovered by the engineering firm that cause us to conclude we had major water intrusion issues. At that point, we contacted Scott and his firm and asked him to pursue this matter for us. It's been going on since that time. And the most recent decision, which has been alluded to several times, is that in the last decision by a judge, 10 of the 24 units have been excluded from the lawsuit. So at the present time, we only have 4 of the 24 units that are allowed to proceed with that lawsuit. The conclusion of the engineering firm and the subsequent assessment on the part of contractors that it would take us something like $2.5 million to repair the damages caused by the construction defects. That's $2.5 million from what is largely a senior citizen townhouse association. About 75% of our occupants are living on retired incomes, are no longer a member of the workforce. Obviously, this presents a severe hardship for those individuals. So the exclusion, or in this case, misinterpretation of where we think the law should be addressed, eliminating potentially $1 million from a possible source of funds to repair those homes, is rather significant to us, both in terms of dollars and the ability of people to pay for that repair. Living on the retirement income, you can imagine that if an assessment is levied and individuals can't pay that assessment, the logical course of events would be for those individuals to lose those homes due to lack of repair, subsequent deterioration, and being unable to fund a correction of the problem. So for that reason, and for the reason that was mentioned before, when most of the homeowners bought these units, there was no statute of limitation that applied. So the rules of the game were changed on us after the fact. And we think that it's not appropriate for that to occur in this instance. So we would like to see the new bill or amendment, how you wish to phrase that, to be corrected so that a proper interpretation could be made to give us at least a partial source of funds to repair the defective units. With that, I'd entertain any questions.
Are there any questions from members?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Oh,
Representative Westrom? Real briefly, just to the witness, this change didn't necessarily address your specific issue, but it would affect future issues that are similar. Is that?
Depends on whether or not it's retroactive. Now, the lawsuit is currently outstanding, I believe, so it depends on the nature of how you pass the bill. A proper interpretation of the bill with 10 to 12 years, I think, would include an additional 10 units in our lawsuit. Is that correct, Scott?
If I may, Representative, the bill as stated, the effective date, it would be effective following final enactment and would apply to cases that are pending on or after that date. So, in fact, passage of the bill would, in fact, favorably impact Mr. Raddick's claim because it's pending currently.
Okay. Thank you. No other questions? Then, anybody want to testify on the other side?
Could I add just one other comment? You'll be hearing another bill later about attorney's fees to prohibit getting up again and delivering the same sort of thing. Obviously, we're in favor of attorney fees being included in the additional bill.
Okay, thank you. Was there somebody that wanted to speak on the other side of this? Okay, then I know quite a few people are interested in House File 211. And representatives.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We'll lay that bill over for future consideration and debate and vote on it. Representative Slales, Representative Mahoney, can you read the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 211.
Thank you.
Possible improvements.
Representative Slales, Representative
Mahoney
has moved the bill. Could you present the
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep this very, very brief because we have so many people here who came long distances to share. House File 211 would provide attorney's fees for homeowners who prevail in court on a warranty claim. Right now, a homeowner who wins a judgment against the builder may not recover his or her attorney fees. This proposal would allow a prevailing homeowner to collect reasonable attorney's fees and other out-of-pocket costs after winning on a warranty claim. And at this time, if Mr. Anderson or Mr. Peterson would be interested in speaking, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief on this, and I would like to just make 2 points. All of the people here have stories that are very personal. I see it from a more macro level. I've represented probably 300, maybe 400 homeowners over the course of the last 7 or 8 years. And I suppose there are 3 things that I think are worth mentioning from a macro level. Number one, 99% of those cases have been situations where there is no contract provision between the builders and the homeowners that would allow the recovery of attorney's fees. And so those cases all seem to proceed along a similar path. They take somewhere between 9 months and 2 years to resolve. Homeowners pay somewhere between $40,000 or $50,000 in attorney's fees. They settle their cases for somewhere in the neighborhood of 75% to 80% of the actual cost of repair, because it would cost them even more money if they wanted to go to trial. The 1% of the cases I've represented where there's a contract provision that allows for the recovery of attorney's fees tend to settle in about 3 to 6 months, with homeowners paying somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 to $5,000 or $6,000, because there's an obvious incentive on all sides, particularly the side of the builder and the insurance company, to get them resolved sooner and without incurring lots of fees. 2 other quick points just related to what I understand to be the opposition to this bill. Number one, I'm sure you will hear that, you know, in this economy, builders are struggling. There's no doubt that they are. I would suggest, however, though, that all of the people here are probably in aggregate struggling a lot more than the builders are as homeowners. And they're the ones who end up footing the bill when they have to make a warranty claim. On the flip side, builders don't foot the bill. In 99.9% of the cases, it's the insurance company that ends up footing that bill. Last thing I'd like to say, I heard this argument made the other day that if an attorney fee bill passed, then builders would stop building and insurers would stop insuring. And so I thought, well, that doesn't make sense, but I can't just come up and tell you that doesn't make sense. So it took me 10 minutes today to look around the country on Westlaw, and in 10 minutes I found 3 other states that had a warranty law just like ours, Connecticut, Louisiana, and Mississippi, that all allow for the recovery of attorney's fees if a plaintiff, if a homeowner wins. And oddly enough, I then went to the Internet and Google, and I looked to see if I could find some new houses for sale. And there are new houses for sale in all 3 of those states. And as far as I understand, they have to be insured to build. So I think that the Chicken Little concept of the world is going to shift on its axis if you allow for the recovery of attorney's fees simply doesn't bear fruit. And I hope that you'll hear testimony from all of these people and take it to heart. Thank you.
Has anybody signed up to speak?
No.
My understanding was there were quite a few people wanted to speak on this. I guess for the rest that wanted to speak, the woman in the red sweater has the list, and maybe you could pass it around and get it going so that we have some direction where to go next.
Directions move.
What is your name?
My name is Steve Palmer.
Okay. And Mr. Palmer, just state your address and then state your whatever you wanted to say about the bill.
Okay. My address is 10187 Bridgewater Circle, Woodbury, Minnesota, in the Powers Lake subdivision. Lovely subdivision. This home was our dream home. At the time, we had a son who had medical issues. We needed a bigger place. We needed to be closer to hospitals. We purchased a home so that we could be safe. A year and a half later, we found water coming into the home. and realize that we have what's classified as a water intrusion issue. We learned that our home was never inspected for Kirkland Rath, which technically I don't believe in. A certificate of occupancy ever should have been issued for the home. We've learned a lot of things in the 2.5 years that we've been forced to fight to sue our builder to get our home repaired. To date, we've spent over $40,000 trying to get our home owner warranty honored, which it's kind of a joke when you think about a warranty. I shudder to think if the automobile industry or others who offer warranties catch wind that the home builders are not honoring their warranties, the economy would have a drastic downturn, and as everybody would need to sue for any warranty to be honored. Over the 2.5 years, I have done a lot of research, I've talked to a lot of people, I've flown to Washington, D.C., I've visited with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann's office, who tells me this is a state issue, not a federal issue. I've visited with U.S. Senator Norm Coleman's office, who told me that this is a state issue, not a federal issue. I've visited with U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, who told me that while it's a state issue, it's not really in her area of work or protection. I was recommended to contact the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, Commissioner Steve Swigum, as that entity is responsible for code and code violations in the state of Minnesota. I was informed there that while there would be an investigation, that the city of Woodbury really is the entity that's responsible for overseeing code violation in the city in which I live, Woodbury. I visited with Glenn Wilson, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. I visited with Representative Scheid, Washington County Commissioner Dennis Hedberg, Honorable Mayor Hargis of Woodbury, the City Building Code Inspector, Director, and the Woodbury official Ron Grubka. Not any of these individuals at the city, county, state, or federal level were able to help me in any way, shape, or form. So, my wife and I march on. We're not sure we're going to need $50,000 on top of what we've already spent in order to go through a trial, at which point we're told, advised, that the builder could then appeal a verdict should we win, and that appeal process could cost an additional $12,000 to $30,000. At which point, if we win again, we're advised that we may have to sue the builder again to actually get the money. I have 3 children, and I don't have a lot of money left. I'm at a point where there's some settlement conversations, and I think we've agreed, although they've actually changed the dollar amount that they agreed to once, reducing it by a significant percent. In order to haggle that over or fight it, gosh, it would cost just about the same amount of money that we'd be fighting over. Which is the same scenario if we were to go to trial, we would spend about the same amount of money that the settlement is less the expenses that we're going to incur. So I'm not sure if we have an agreement or not. I'm not sure if I even want to sign it. I'm not even sure if I should be speaking today. And I keep thinking, am I in America? I had a home warranty. I bought a $583,000 house. What did I pay for that warranty? I know what I'm paying today for the warranty. I never, in my wildest imagination, would have thought that I would be required to spend $40,000 to $90,000 additional dollars for that warranty. My home wasn't inspected. It's been found to have been built in a reverse lot manner, that the paper is supposed to lap top over bottom so that when the water comes down, it runs down the bottom. My friends that are five could figure that out. But no, our home, it's like this. So when the water comes down, it goes into a wall system, and there it sits, and it can't get out, and it laps. I had so much to say that I don't quite know whether I should talk about the sleepless nights, the aggravation, the worrying about my children's college fund, whether I can eat, canceling our family vacation, cutting out things that we as normal people like to do because we don't have the money, worrying, am I going to be able to repair this home? I keep looking for different options. I can't sell it the way it is. I have to repair it, but I don't have the money. Foreclosure? Gosh, I went to college. I've worked hard. I make a good living. Even if I walk away, I still lose because my wages are garnished. I have to sit here. What if I had an opportunity for a job on Pennsylvania Avenue? My dream. In the last 2.5 years in Clinton, I wouldn't be able to take it, because I've got this issue at home that I have to fight. So I march on, and I think to myself, there's got to be a way. I keep looking, I keep talking. Department of Labor and Industry does an investigation, and they tell me they closed it because they're not getting clear direction from the city of Woodbury. I argue with the city of Woodbury, come to my home. Please, take the pieces of stucco off and tell me that the paper is either reversed properly or not. Oh, we can't do that. There's no help. Mike Hatt from the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry came to our home and told us all kinds of stories. Families that have gotten divorced over this. Families that have gone bankrupt and lost everything because of this. And I keep saying that I had a warranty. I go to bed at night, but I had a warranty. This is America. How can this be? And I wake up every morning with this on my mind. And this is what we've spent for 2.5 years. And I kind of got this gun to my head, like, you better take their offer. If you go to court, you may not get anything. And even if you do, you're going to have to possibly spend more, and on it goes. What about the people that don't have an account with $30,000 to $40,000, that don't have stock to sell? What happens when we have these foreclosed homes all over our communities that not only are they foreclosed, we're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars of repair that needs to be done before they can even get to the market for sale? This is serious. I don't know if you want to know that with two cars that have 100,000 miles, I was planning on buying a new one, I thought this would be a good year. I can't. Anybody have a line to Barack Obama? I got a great plan. I get 10,000 people to work tomorrow. We get a federal plan to fix these homes. We want to talk about tax legislation. Is anybody creating a tax legislation so like the people that live on the Carolina coast and have their home rebuilt every 7 years by some federal program because the waves tore it down? Should I have a program? Is there a program for homeowners who are saddled with these kinds of losses? I feel like there's a lot of people here that probably have a lot to say, and I think you get the picture.
This is Mahoney.
Any questions?
Yeah, I have one question. Now, I ask you too. Are you negotiating with the contractor or with the insurance company? And is the settlement 50 cents on the dollar, 80 cents on the dollar, 90 cents on the dollar? What's it offer? And I don't want to get you in trouble legally.
So I will not make any statement as to those percentages or dollar amounts. Absolutely not. Okay. What I can tell you is that we've been in mediation for 9 months. And I can tell you that the mediator's hourly charge is $325. And I can tell you that my lawyer fees are between $165 and $225 per hour, depending who calls. So you can see where $500 an hour is being charged for a mediator.
No, I understand the need not to answer some of those.
Yes,
appreciate that.
Representative Westbrook. Chair, to the witness, is your issue solely with the builder and they're not covering warranty, or is it also with the city inspector who maybe never did their job and left you to believe that they had inspected it?
Mr. Palmer.
I had issues with everybody around the board. The city, you can't do anything. There's no sense in having an issue. Do I think they should have inspected my home? Absolutely. Is there anything I can do about that? No. Unless somebody has an idea here. I mean, this is crazy. You buy a home that was never inspected, there's no accountability anywhere. Can't sue the city, they're not responsible. So, give my name, phone number, whatever. If anybody's got a better idea for me on the city angle, I'd love it because it's ridiculous. But currently, no, it's litigation against the builder and the subcontractors. And I should mention, too, I forget the gentleman's name who very eloquently presented the macro picture. He's absolutely right. The builder's sitting back, oh, I got an insurance company, this and that, and I got indemnity contracts with my subcontractors, and I'm protected 6 days to Sunday. No skin off their back whatsoever. This bill? Absolutely. If they knew they had to pay our legal fees, there's no question about a jury that we would win. You gotta be kidding me. House was never inspected, the paper was put on wrong, all these different ways, all this damage, blah, blah, blah. Of course we would win. But they drug it out 2.5 years, and they just simply wouldn't, because they know they would lose, they know they would pay their legal fees and ours, and they would be accountable. And I think it would be a 3 to 6 month process. Yep, you got done that. You can't get out of this one. We didn't even have the inspection. Code violation right there. There'd be no question. We would have been done with this a long time ago.
Okay, Mr. Palmer, I think we have to let others, because legislators at 8:30 turn into werewolves, so.
I
we have to let other people
see that's a very good
presentation.
Thank you for your time. Apologize for taking some of anybody else's.
No, I just have a question. Some make a comment that we really appreciate. I know it can't be easy to talk about that type of situation and how agonizing it is, and we really appreciate that you took the time to share it with us.
Thank you. Who's the next person on the list, sir? Okay. Please state your name and your address.
My name is Ed Seifert. I live at 4459 Snowhead Boulevard in Shoreview. And thank you for allowing me to speak. I've written a statement. I think it's easier if I just read something. And I try to keep it
comfortable.
Yeah. I speak in support of the Home Warranty Attorney Fees Bill. From personal experience, I have learned why this change is needed. My wife and I lived through a home warranty dispute. In 2003, we discovered severe water intrusion damage to our home, which the construction companies involved in its construction acknowledged, but blamed on each other, not on us. We hired experts who offered opinions that the damage was due to a combination of construction defects made by these companies. These opinions did not affect the company's response to our situation. Consequently, we began a home warranty lawsuit against these companies. That is when the games began. The insurance company lawyers knew well that under current law, we could recover only the cost of fixing our house. They also knew that most homeowners do not have unlimited cash reserves. Consequently, they employed a legal strategy of making the lawsuit expensive for us by deposing as many people as possible, by filing a summary judgment motion with little chance of success, by scheduling mediation sessions but not seriously participating in the mediation, and on and on and on. Here's the strange arithmetic driving home warranty disputes such as ours. Suppose a house has $150,000 of construction defect damage, which is the liability of the insurance companies. It's undisputed damage. If they can invest $30,000 in attorney costs that results in a settlement of $100,000, this translates into a savings of $20,000 for them. On the other side, the homeowner spends $30,000 in attorney costs, or perhaps more, to recover $100,000. And then they come out with a net of $70,000, but they need $150,000 to fix their house. So they're essentially out $80,000 in the transaction. Why doesn't the homeowner just settle and go to court? Well, as has already been noted, trials are expensive, and all that a trial might gain in this particular scenario would be another $50,000, maybe. In our case, I'm done with my hypothetical. In our case, the insurance company's strategy paid off. Before going to trial, we agreed to settle for less than the cost of fixing our house. Here's the bottom line. It cost us about $151,000 to fix our $260,000 house. It cost us about $55,000 in attorney and expert fees to recover the settlement. We settled for $130,000. Our loss was about $77,000. If homeowners who prevail in home warranty disputes could recover attorney fees, construction company insurers would settle the disputes sooner. This would save homeowners unnecessary litigation costs. Actually, it would save everyone unnecessary litigation costs. But in addition, of an equal importance, it would save the homeowners from the stress and aggravation of pursuing lengthy litigation as a means of trying to fix a problem, not of their creation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sedgwick. And I'm sorry, we're going to have to really cut short because all of a sudden nobody raised their hands, they wanted to speak, and all of a sudden everybody signed up. So we'll have to, Paul Presley, can you come up? We're gonna have to use roughly about a 3 minutes. Sorry, because, so if you could get directly to the point.
My name is Carol Presley, and I live at 3298 York Alcove here in Woodbury. And I have to say I've been extremely fortunate to not have to have to deal with any of these issues. But I have friends in the audience here who I've lived this nightmare with, and for years just lived their hell. But I'm here tonight to actually read a testimony that was written by Charlene Cole. Charlene could not be here tonight. She's at a conferences for her children. When she has 3 children, she lives in Harris, Minnesota. I ask that you view these bills through another lens, that of a consumer, a mother, a father, and a homeowner. Ask yourself, after listening to our stories, is this for my family and my experience? Would I want the language of these bills as they are? I would tend to believe your answers would be no. Contractors and subcontractors, as Mr. Palmer said, have the insurance coverage that provides them with an attorney to litigate. But there's typically no dollars out of their pocket. Homeowners must pay their own way if they can afford to do so. My family has faced tremendous struggles along the way when dealing with a home that we are not able to live in due to mold and deficiencies. The only option available to us was litigating against the contractor and other parties involved in order to recover damages under the homeowner's warranty. For my family's situation, we have a home that is constructed in the water table, which violates the city code. In addition to common construction practice, we have water intrusion problems, which has caused mold within our home, a rift that leaks in the main level and into the basement ceiling, no flashing around the windows, and no weather-resistant barrier, and yet a permit was given for the home and it passed our inspections. Unfortunately, city building officials are unable to claim immunity and are therefore not held liable for damages. as they don't have an obligation to the homeowners. But the permit fees to help pay for their salaries. My family has paid out of our own pockets for inspections performed by engineers, general contractors, building inspectors. My colleges, I believe it's called, for med testing, soil testing, and retainer for our attorney, which down a contingency basis, goes for 33.5% minus our initial retainer would be taken in after awarded an amount in damages, if they awarded anything. In addition, we have paid out additional living expenses because we're not able to live in the home, as well as taxes and insurance for two homes, maintenance, insurance, and utility bills. Therefore, if we are awarded the full $229,000 that's needed just to fix the property, and then pay the attorney's contingency fee, we won't even have enough money to fix the house. We will only have $153,000 remaining to fix the house, and we've incurred $85,000 in expenses to litigate. As a mother, I try to provide stability, structure, and comfort in our home for our children. But it seems like an endless task, especially with one of our children being special needs and thriving on structure. Our children have experienced health problems for more than our home, leaving us with no other option but to move. My husband and I have five jobs between the two of us. Trying to find a home in which we cannot live, the attorney's fees, investigative work, blah, 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 and a new mortgage for a house that we purchased because we were technically homeless for 8 months. I would never have imagined walking into this lawsuit that it would have been so devastating to us financially and emotionally. As Webster Dictionary defines warranty as a usually written guarantee of the integrity of a product and of the maker's responsibility for the repair or replacement of defective parts. How is the homeowner's warranty really a warranty if homeowners are having to file lawsuits to recoup under the warranty and in turn not able to recoup attorney's fees or applicable costs that they have to pay out to litigate for claim under this warranty? The homeowner's warranty with its current language provides little or no protection for homeowners. I would ask each of you to support the revisions to this bill, that they are just and fair, which is what every homeowner deserves. And we would like to have this in as part of the official record, the full text.
You can give us the budget.
Read. Thank you.
For the amount of attorney's fees here, Representative Mahoney may build you a good home.
I'm not a good carpenter, but I'm a hell of a typewriter.
Robert Arnold? You can.
I will be very brief.
Okay, thank you.
But I do favor both of these bills that are before you. My name is Robert Arnold. I live at 2383 North Ridge Avenue Court in West Lakeland, Minnesota. My home in West Lakeland was built in two phases, with phase one completion date of July 1995 and the second phase in 1997. I discovered defects within the 10-year period of the original completion date, but by the time I was able to get an engineering firm out there to give me a report I could use to show the defects, it was beyond the 10-year period. It was well within the 12-year period. You know, it was a problem. The addition that was put onto my house is within the 10-year period, so I still have a claim. Under the current law, the builders, the subcontractors, the insurance companies, the attorneys dragged this process out so long that they just drained the homeowners to the point where we just can't afford to continue going on with the process. Too many of us just take a settlement in order to end it, and it's a meager settlement that doesn't pay for the home repair. I'm currently in my third year of fighting this. I've paid about $30,000 in engineering and attorney's fees, and it's just a process that goes on and on and on, and it's not fair, and I would ask you to please pass both of these bills before you. Thank you.
Gene Nelson.
A lot of this is redundant, but I guess that's the story.
That's what we're trying to explain. Real people explaining their problems.
Yeah. My name is Jean Nelson, and my husband and I live in Hugo, Washington County. We built our home in 1997. In 2006, we noticed most of the 32 homes in our development had gone through some form of rehabilitation due to the moisture intrusion. I was served with a 10-year time frame to report a problem under the builder's warranty. We hired CMT, Certified Moisture Testing, to come and test our home for moisture, just in case there was a problem. We didn't notice anything even at that point. And I distinctly remember the tester coming to the door and telling me, call an attorney immediately. You have got moisture problems everywhere. In August of 2006, I called the attorney. We notified the builder, who had gone out of business, finished his name, gone out of business again, and started up again. So his two insurance companies were brought into the lawsuit. They were brought, and they brought in their subs. So we now had 7 attorneys involved. 2 representing the builder's insurance companies, the stucco contractor, the stonemason, the roofer, the window manufacturer. They all came to inspections, or sections of the stucco were torn off through the multiple builder's defects. And we've heard all of those, lapping and flashings and whatever. From our point of view, my husband and I feel like we financed 2.5 years of finger pointing amongst those different parties. The builder's insurance company started out telling us they were sorry that we were not eligible for any compensation. If we had not had an attorney, the whole thing would have been over right there on the spot. We went to court over a summary judgment that the judge had ruled against. We had a pretrial, and in the end, we were forced to take a settlement on the evening of the second pretrial after warnings that a third jury court would cost us an additional $50,000 on top of the $57,000 we had already spent. We were told the verdict in the court would not be binding and the party could appeal and it would just go on forever. And we've all experienced that. At this point, our house had water pouring in through the door frames, mushrooms growing in the windows, carpenter ants coming out of the woodwork, and the woodwork and molding were all buckling. My college daughter had come home, and in the summers, she spent 2 summers in a tent in the backyard because she couldn't breathe in that house. We settled for less than our bids said it would cost to bring our house back to whole, so we were now figuring out how to put our house back together on the money we were given. We know for positive it will not be of equal quality as it was before. We are also looking at doing a lot of work ourselves because of the settlement. We now have a house that has depreciated in value by over $400,000. We used to pay around $10,000 in taxes in Washington County. We now pay $4,800. The city, the county, and the schools are all losing out for years because of this long, drawn-out process. The builder's insurance company should be responsible for these fees, right along with the homeowner's attorney fees, I think. None of this is our fault. We did nothing wrong. We hired a reputable builder who was insured, and this is where we're at. The question was not about the builder and instead of building a faulty home. The money was all spent assessing, assigning blame amongst the contributing parties. We ended up putting the bill for 2.5 years exercise of this. If we had not hired an attorney and sued, we would have ended up with nothing. If all parties knew that they were paying for the client's attorney bill, this would go quicker, the money would go to the problem, not the endless depositions, discovery, and litigation. And I know you all hear about solutions, so I wrote from the homeowner's point of view how I would write the rules, how I would go about this. If I were writing, it would go like this. 1, CMI would come out and do the testing for moisture. 2, the siding or whatever would come up to expose the full problem. Right now, you don't even know. It's all speculation. You don't even know what's under that stucco. 5 bids would be required to certified experts of mold remediation, average the bids, and this amount would be paid by the builder's insurance company to the homeowner. The builder that does the remediation would assign the percent of blame for the subs. The subs would reimburse the builder's insurance company for their portion. This would take about 2 months. It could be facilitated by an attorney, and that would be it.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Yep.
Larry Mueller.
My name is Larry Mueller. I live at 367 Wildwood Avenue in Birchwood, which is in Washington County. Actually, I'm in favor of both bills also because we've been through both of these issues. We had a home in Hugo. High-end home, get a warranty that you think you had. We were within our 10-year period. We ended up being forced to spend over $200,000 on our home to make it sellable. We recouped less than 50 cents on the dollar of that, plus the attorney's fees, because again, I believe everything that's been said is what we went through also. We were forced to do that because we had no recourse and we were already at a lot of attorney's fees, a lot of expert fees, and we just had to settle. So we lost a lot of equity, well over $100,000 plus all the fees that we spent on the home, just so we could sell it. Again, a high-end builder. Touching on that, that's another piece of legislation. Builders should not be allowed to go into business, build a house, go out of business, change their name, continue building houses, and not be liable. We tried to go after the builder that built our house. He was scot-free because Minnesota law says that if he dissolves that corporation legally, he's not liable for that 10-year warranty. We had to backtrack through all the insurance companies and fight with all of them to try to get less than 50 cents on the dollar. That's another piece. Now we're in another home with another high-end builder, very high-end builder, paid through the nose, and we're, again, in the process right now, we're well within, it's a three-year-old home. We're fighting with this builder about legitimate warranty issues that aren't mold and moisture intrusion, but the same issue that now we are having to hire experts and attorneys to get them to fix legitimate problems with our home. This is all coming out of our pocket. I mean, this is like deja vu. We're just going, I mean, something's got to be done. You know, this has got to go into the favor of the people. I mean, the insurance companies, the builders cannot keep shirking this responsibility and having us with the bill. That's all I got to say.
Mr. Powell? Powell?
I'm a little different here. I'm not a homeowner, but I live with some certified moisture testing, and we've tested a bunch of these houses that are out here. And the reason I'm testifying to do is because I work on these houses every day. We probably test on the average 450 to 500 homes a year, and half of those houses have issues with moisture. And what we are seeing is much like what these people are talking about. People get to their house, they come out, we tell them they got issues, they need to get the issues addressed. And then they find out that it's going to cost them an arm and a leg to get their house fixed because the builders have put up the wall. I like to say that the builders control this issue. And the only way to get them to understand what the homeowner is going through is have them pay this attorney bill. Once they start paying this bill, I'm very sure that the process that people go through is going to be a lot easier. And I don't think people are going to take advantage of it, but that's my clients, they just want their home fixed. They bought a house thinking everything was done right, and now they find out there was problems, but they're the ones that are having to pay for everything, and the builder's walking away from it. And I just like to say that I think that the state needs to do something to take care of this problem. Thank you.
Yes. Could be Stavman.
1-2-4-3-5-44
Right. Okay.
You came a long way. Just wanted, yeah. I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
You're
better than I do.
Now, do I need to push this up, or are you waiting on me? Okay. Surprised by our family, the Poster family of defective houses. Because back in 1994, April 8th, 1994 to be exact, we moved into what was supposed to be our dream house. We opened the door to find water coming into the basement and water coming through the ceiling in the living room in a two-story house. The house was only 5 years old. and we were indeed the third owners of that house. The first owner moved only a couple miles away into a very similar house. We've been in the newspaper, the Star Tribune, we've been on television. I've testified previously before Senate and legislative committees about the problems with our house. We filed a lawsuit only after finding that we could not resolve the issue with the sellers and with the real estate company whose agents actually covered up body damage for the sellers. We were out tens of thousands of dollars in attorneys and engineer fees. We got none of that back and were stuck with all the problems of a lonely house that is still to this day decomposing. Our children became very ill in the house. We ended up going to so many different doctors and immunologists. Our life became doctors, immunologists, going out of town for treatments, and learning what are we doing to our children. And people said to us, why do you not move out of that house? You're killing your children. Our whole family indeed became ill, and you know, that's another story in itself. After filing suit, we found that the legal system was not there to help us. We lost our case. Most of our evidence was thrown out in court. The opposing attorneys did everything we could to stall our case, increase our costs, and inconvenience us. I can tell you what it's like trying to work when you have practice orders coming to your door at midnight. And then finding, when you go to court, that your evidence is thrown out after you've spent hours and hours taking pictures and videotaping the problems with the house. We were told that we could appeal our case, so attorneys backed out at that point, saying that it was going to cost us too much and we didn't have any money left. If you wanted to figure our cost, not only did you have to consider the cost of repairs to our house, my husband lost his job because he took too many sick days paying for our children who previously were well because they had to go to doctor appointments, and as a teacher, I could not take off from work as often as he could. We would ask for help, and there may be permanent damage, we don't know. Time off work. We had a disaster crew coming after the previous Adolphus tumor, St. Peter's tumor, that had come in to help from real walls. We had to stop that, and again, ran out of money. Right now, we're staying near the house, like I said, it's decomposing. We're rotting windows. There are paint popping off the outside because of the moisture in the walls. Some of the walls that we already did repair. We added a ventilation system that temporarily helped some of the moisture issues in the house. We were running air cleaners constantly, keeping windows open, trying to lessen the mold counts in the house. I would say that these people who are speaking tonight deserve to have their attorney's fees returned to them. We know from our example that a cost to us to school and attorney's fees, and also on the engineering fees. We had very, very high-priced engineers come into our house. And we lost our case, and here we are to this day, still in financial ruin. My daughter wants to be either a veterinarian or a pediatrician. You don't know where the money is going to come for her college. We don't know what we're going to do. We can't sell the house because we need to reveal. So on case number 945757, we lost our case because of the many issues in our house. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak tonight.
Nancy Emerson could come up and be in the front row, so we're getting close on time. Sorry.
My name is Nancy Johnson, and I live at 2210 Chalet Drive in Columbia Heights. And I'm not going to talk about my situation, but what I would like to say is that a lot of the people that are here today or tonight testifying are in the metropolitan area. But we know we also have a website of homeowners that have sort of stayed in contact, and this website has actually been growing. We do a lot of emailing for homeowners who have had construction defects and water intrusion. And the emails have come from all around the state. They've come from East Grand Forks and Crookston and Shevlin and Bemidji and Duluth and Big Fork and Little Fork and on down 35 and Rivers Falls and Alexandria. And I understand the city of Rochester has major problems down there, and Kenyon and Canton and Montgomery and over to Bennett Falls and back up through the state. And so
What you hear here is about Woodbury. You hear about the other metropolitan areas, but what you don't hear about, because people can't travel, is all the other homeowners across the state that are having problems, the same kind of problems, the same issues with attorney fees and construction defects, and nobody to help them at the state who's supposed to be responsible and oversee these issues. And I'll just say one more thing. Mr. Palmer, in Congress, the person you need to talk to is Representative John Conyers out of Michigan, and he actually has offered a bill to try and deal with this issue of water intrusion, and Representative Keith Ellison from Minnesota also signed on to be a co-author of that bill. And there are other national organizations that are trying to make changes at the federal level to deal with these issues, because it's happening all over the country. Thank you.
Nancy Emerson, in Deville Heights, Minnesota. Along with Nancy Johnson, we've received thousands of new emails, heard horror stories, including our own, which we won't get into because, of course, there are all disclosure issues. We've heard of bankruptcies. We've heard of people getting sick. There's been a lot of talk about the monitor, but I wanted to bring up the point of health issues. Most of these people have two mortgages because they can't live in their home, and they conscientiously want to take care of their children or the other people in their home because mold can be toxic. And I just wanted to point out the Minnesota Department of Health fact sheet that cites right in here what the health concerns are mold. It's published by the state of Minnesota. It says what are the greatest risks of living in mold, and it's infants and children, elderly people, individuals with respiratory conditions or sensitivities such as allergies or asthma, persons having severely weakened immune systems, for example, people with HIV infection, chemotherapy patients, and organ transplant recipients. People, by necessity, because they want to live in a safe home, and they want to live in a safe and healthy home. And people have gone bankrupt and everything. That's all I have to say. I get real excited. I've been doing this for 4 years.
Yvonne McGonigal. And then John Weirda. This is John. Go ahead.
My name is Yvonne McGonigal, and I am a resident of Woodbury, and my husband and I are currently going through the litigation process. When we built our home, we were given a 10-year homeowner's warranty. Our understanding was that we had warranty protection if we developed a warranty claim. We thought that warranty meant something. It turns out it is nothing but a meaningless piece of paper. Why should we have to resort to paying large sums of money to an attorney to enforce our warranty? The Builders Association will try to convince you this legislation is unnecessary and that it will place a burden on them in the current economic climate. In reality, builders rarely have to put money out of their own pocket. Their insurance companies protect them by paying their claims and covering the attorney fees, and their subcontractors contribute substantially as well. There is no financial incentive for them to honor warranty claims, and they can rely on their insurance company to take care of everything for them. It is the homeowner who bears an unjustifiable burden, made even more difficult in these trying economic times. I strongly support legislation that allows homeowner attorney fees and other related expenses. I believe it would expedite the time it takes to reach a settlement of currently 1.5 to 2 years, reduce homeowner attorney fees, and relieve the financial burden that homeowners must bear. The current process is ruled by the builder's attorneys deliberately trying to wear plaintiffs down by dragging out the litigation process through stalling tactics employed, such as not responding to interrogatories for months, while the plaintiffs have only a few short weeks to respond, and offering ridiculously low settlements during the mediation process, all designed to hike up the plaintiff's attorney fees.
We have been given estimates of $15,000 to $30,000 in attorney fees to get through mediation, and after listening to everybody else, it's likely to be much higher than that, and tens of thousands more if our case goes to trial to resolve our stucco moisture intrusion issue. How many homeowners have that kind of money set aside? We were forced to take out a loan in order to pay our attorney fees. Many other homeowners don't have that option. If the builders and the insurance companies were held responsible for homeowners' attorney fees, perhaps they would be motivated to ensure a quicker, less costly resolution process. I would like to thank Representative Swears for offering this important, timely legislation and the committee for giving us an opportunity to speak here this evening.
Thank you. John Weir.
John Weir from Wilmer. I kind of came here to be a fly in the wall, and not where to start, not sure where to end, but I just want to say an amen to everyone who's through the pain and the agony and the gut wrench of having a vandal to come in and destroy their largest asset, at least on our behalf. And we're through the frustration of a system that'll foster that kind of behavior. I think that government's most basic need is to protect its citizens. And I think there's a big step forward to bring the people who's against this kind of common sense litigation or to fight this. They got a little more skin in the game, so to speak. I heard President Obama last week talking about everyone's going to have some pain in the rebuilding process. Well, I think it's only fair that the insurance companies, the big money people, are going to sit and destroy people's lives, that they should be able to participate in the cost and just bring to the table to have more honest opinion and say what's going on. Because it's truly a travesty what's going on. I just feel like I'm going to get ill listening to these people. It's just we've been out of our home since December of 06. We're not as far along as a lot of people here. But I just can't imagine it. I just want to encourage you as the people that can do something about this and beg and plead with you to bring this to light, bring it to fruition, and just level the playing field. We're homeowners. We want to be happy as a plant. We don't have to fight. I guess every one of us here has been dragged into this and just been living a slow motion train wreck. And I just want to encourage everyone here who's got a say in it to keep moving down that path and hopefully sooner than later. Because a lot of us are truly just hanging on and just trying to make it. And bad, bad deal, but I have seen our legislators try to encourage them. Some are attaboy, I'm all for you. This is your home, this is your house. I'm glad to see you show up. And others aren't quite so bubbly about it. And gotta be careful about these laws. It'll affect a lot of people. You want to throw me under the bus and get rid of me with the rest of people here. But I just want to encourage that. It's a bad situation. I had no idea the depth and the breadth of what's going on here. It's just truly a travesty. And it's a shame that the state of Minnesota has this type of environment. I can understand the Florida, the Louisiana, the hurricanes, the fast
in and out situations. I think Minnesota is a little more, or tries to be a little more protecting and serene. And how it does, how it acts, and sets forth its rules, regulations. But that's all I'm at, I guess. Just want to be encouraging to each person here. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Word. And Mr. Krzyzkowski, I predicted 8:30, and we just finished the testimony. So unless there's questions, Representative Wells, did you want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I truly do want to thank the committee for coming to Woodbury tonight and to express my deep appreciation for listening to these wonderful people who many have driven so very far to be here. The one thing that I would like to state is that there was a legislative analyst who in 2004 put together a document to give to the House of Representatives. The title of the document is Attorney Fee Awards in Minnesota Statutes. It is pages upon pages of attorney fees that are awarded reasonable costs to the people who are, you know, plaintiffs in situations and who prevail. This is not a unique thing that the homeowners are asking for. This is something that is done repeatedly. We're not creating new ground. So my plea to the committee is when we do take up this bill again for consideration, when you are actually voting on it, that we will try to have this document available for you so that you can see that in statute this is a common practice and that the homeowners that are here this evening should have a sense and feeling of justice because we're acting on their behalf. Thank you again.
Thank you, Representative Scales. And at one point, I believe they left out... when a contractor through the homeowner on the stand is lien by a court decision, not by statute, there's a real complicated statute on it, but in all cases, by a very old court decision, the contractor gets their attorney's fees in the homeowner. So, I want to thank everybody for coming. We really appreciate that you came out, but I think you should appreciate the legislators that came out after a regular day and were interested enough to come and hear all of your testimony. So with that, the House File 211 is laid over for possible inclusion, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.